Hey, this is Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
Good morning.
Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Russ.
How's everybody?
All right, dude. How are you?
I'm okay. I did a bachelor's over the weekend. I am not the 20-year-old I used to be. I am very, very aware of my incoming 40s.
Oh, Lord.
We took Corbin for survival training on Saturday. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get into that.
Yeah, so that's also not for 40-year-olds.
Welcome to The Video Store. Thank you for wandering in. We've got ourselves a lovely day here, and we've got ourselves lovely movies and series, cool. And even some games that we want to rent you.
Nice.
We want you to leave with something that will fill your nights, fill your days with enjoyment.
Cool.
We have ourselves a Graham here today.
Hello.
Graham is very much the producer of this show, and also an editor.
Yeah.
We've got ourselves a Gaddy.
Hey, hey.
Gaddy makes candy. He is the proprietor, is that the word, of the Gaddles Candy Company.
Mm. Yeah.
You're a sweet magnet. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we're going to have ourselves a lovely day.
Sure.
What is survival training? Is that like for swimming?
No, it's like they go out on a hike and they get a booklet with all like plants that you can eat and what you can't eat.
How old is Corbin?
He's nine.
He's not Gad's kid, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, my stepson.
I was about to say, like, you got to know the age of a kid.
Yeah.
He's nine. Okay, that's old enough to potentially be stranded out in the middle of nowhere by themselves.
I mean, yes. As parents, we would make sure that never happens.
Yeah, of course.
But if it does and we're all together, then at least he can tell us which plants to eat. Like, we get home and he's like, yeah, you can, there's a clover I found, you can eat it. And I'm like, okay, a little bite. He's like, you can eat the stalk as well. I'm like, oh, cool, yay, thanks.
Shit, I just think of Into the Wild.
Okay.
Into the Wild.
Yeah.
Right? Where
he lives in the van.
Hirsch.
Oh,
film.
Yes.
Fuck, that is a good movie, eh? Honestly, that is one of...
I didn't connect with that one.
Oh, I really loved it. And then he eats the wrong herb near the end. Spoiler alert. But it's all based on the true life story of a dude who literally put himself in the wilderness.
Right.
Because he wanted to go do that. We going to do ourselves a little Hey, Did You Guys See?
Yes.
We're going to get into that in a moment. I went and I watched September 5. Speaking of films and what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
September 5 is a really interesting, really cool film that's going to hit cinemas soon based on the true life moment at the 1978 Munich Olympics.
Yes.
Once covered by the movie Munich.
Yeah.
But this one has got a very different spin, which I want to get into. I've been going to a bunch of exhibitor screenings, which is quite exciting. So as I said, because I'm the owner of The Bioscope, up until now, I have very much been going to the media screenings of these bigger studio films. Because only in the last year has The Bioscope been able to screen these movies.
Yeah.
We did a nice big upgrade at the start of 2024, and I've kind of entered this house. And it's been very interesting to see. And the smaller indies haven't always been considered.
Right.
And so we wait to see the media screenings, which are often only a few days before it comes out.
Mm.
And this is proving sometimes an issue for me. Most of the time, I think I've got it right.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm just validated when I get a chance to see the movie and I go, cool. But now I'm actually being invited to these exhibitor screenings.
Oh, how long before the screenings are they?
It all depends, but it's often like quite a few weeks.
Okay.
Like I got to see the new Bridget Jones.
Oh, right.
Which was quite cute and cool. And then, of course, the hard part is I don't really know how much I'm able to speak about it from a media perspective. Because
surely they should tell you like what embargo is in place.
Well, most of the time in those exhibitor screenings, they're dealing with exhibitors. They're not dealing with media. I actually have these two hats on.
Yeah.
So I've got to be careful. But I think we can talk about Bridget Jones now.
Okay.
Because I think that's lifted a bit. But also it's like, it's based on a book. We've already, you know, the book's been out. But I got to see The Monkey.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Osgood Perkins.
Nice. All his horror glory. Adapting a Stephen King book.
Yeah.
So yeah, that could be something to talk about.
Nice.
But then there's lots of TV shows. Hey, you guys have been enjoying a lot.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, I've watched the big one that's on the billboards around the city, or at least episode one of Paradise, which is the big Disney Plus.
I have no idea what this is.
Okay, Sterling K. Brown, James Marsden.
Oh, I have seen that on like the front page of Disney. Okay.
It's a biggie. All right. It's their sort of one of their bigger tentpoles. But you guys have been watching?
Well, Marigold's been recommending the 8 show for months.
The 8 show, the letter 8.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Number 8.
Sorry.
So it's
quite... I never had dyslexia. I don't know what that was.
So it's great because since Squid Game, like all this South Korean cinema and TV has just been like brought to the forefront.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of back of the box. Basically, it's almost a similar idea to Squid Game, except there's 8 people, and they live in this like one little building, and they each get a room, and basically money accumulates every minute, and they need to decide how to survive for as long as possible to get as much money as possible.
But it's not a reality show.
You don't know because there's people watching them. And basically, they get time added by being entertaining. And the more violent they are, the more entertaining they are. So it gets twisted and sick. And the characters are despicable.
Okay. But it's scripted. It's scripted. That's what I mean.
Yes.
It's a scripted show. It's not reality.
Yeah, it's scripted like Squid Game.
Okay. All right. But we'll get into that and we'll talk more about that in greater detail later. Mm-hmm. Should we do Hey Did You Guys See?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to kick us off, G-Force?
I can kick us off. Hey Did You Guys See? The Super Bowl happened this week, yesterday, in our time, which means trailers. Trailers galore always happen on the day and then like the week leading up to. There's always like trailers that release like this time of year.
Yeah.
So some of the big ones, obviously the first time we got the Fantastic Four trailer, finally.
Okay, but we saw that though. Didn't we see the trailer? I saw a trailer before.
I saw it about like 4 or 5 days ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they released
it. This week. It came out this week.
Okay.
So is the intention that they release these trailers for the Super Bowl to be screened? Okay. Yeah.
So there'll be trailers played during the Super Bowl, but then also leading up to it, they're always like in the week before, they'll use this as like a
launching
point. I'm like indifferent to this one, to be honest. Not a big fan of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I didn't get a sense of anything special, really.
Yeah,
I think it's got a cool aesthetic.
The like retro futuristic vibe is cool. I like that
look.
It's
very clean.
Yes.
Very subdued, which I think is an interesting kind of way of looking at, because Marvel's always just like action all the way, and this seems like more intellectual, because it makes sense. Mr. Fantastic is a professor, scientist, and it's like, intellectual, so maybe that's going to come across. So.
Yeah, hopefully. At least they're sort of doing... Galactus isn't a big cloud this time, which is nice. Because last time he showed up in Fantastic Four 2, whatever the second one in the previous franchise was, Galactus was literally just a big cloud.
I blocked that out of my memory.
It's garbage. Now he's a dude, at least.
What is he meant to be?
He's like a big dude.
He's a planet eater.
Yeah, literally, he's a guy who eats planets to live, because he's so freaking huge.
Oh my god!
And in the previous movie, last time they did it, he was literally a cloud in space, and they were like, there's a cloud coming.
The whole idea is that he sends the Silver Surfer off to kind of like scout for him to find planets for him to eat.
Okay.
Yeah. And this one's got Lady Silver Surfer. It's a girl this time.
It'll be fun.
Is in the comic book sometimes, but like I don't know. I'm not interested in Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Oh, and it's not set in the normal Marvel universe.
Yes, that's why it looks so different.
In this like alternate, that they kind of established all these alternate realities, and then Deadpool, Wolverine kind of reinforced that. So this is not in the same So I think they're going to introduce this Dr. Doom,
yeah,
which is the idea of Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom, but because it's in a alternate reality,
yeah,
they can justify it, and then he's exactly. obviously going to come across.
Yeah, it allows them to sort of etch a sketch or whatever, yeah. the slate clean.
Exactly.
Okay.
Then we also got, okay, on the Marvel slate as well, I'm actually way more excited about this after the new trailer. The new trailer for Thunderbolts is okay. really good.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, well, this new trailer that just came out
is so good.
What
does the new trailer
good.
Give you?
So it kind of gives us a bit more of the premise. Okay. So the idea is, so they're introducing a character called Century, who, okay, I don't know much about Marvel Comics. I had to, like, Google this. Century is a character who they introduced in, like, the early 2000s, who, in, like, the story, is a character whose history goes back, like, decades, like, the 1940s.
Okay.
But everyone has forgotten about him. Something, like, erased him from everyone's memories, including his own. He has no memory that he was this superhero.
Okay.
Who's this, like, Superman-type character.
Okay.
And it seems like they're pitching him as, like, the villain in this movie, but maybe they're, it sort of seems like they might be doing, like, what they did with the Spider-Man movie with Mysterio, where, like, the 12 people on the planet who don't know that Mysterio is a Spider-Man villain were, like, tricked into thinking he was a hero in the movie.
Okay.
I think they're doing, like, they might be doing, like, the inverse of that in here, and he's actually going to be, like, on their side.
Well, I read the original Thunderbolts comics.
Oh, right.
And the characters are completely different in yeah. the MCU, but the idea of the Thunderbolts were they were a superhero team who was secretly a supervillain team.
Yes.
And no one knew.
It was Norman Osborn, wasn't it? So it was Green Goblin who led the team.
I think he might have been part of it.
Yeah.
So but they pretended they were heroes.
But they were actually villains. It's like a big reveal at the end of the first issue. It's just like they go around and it's just like, you that, and you that. Mm. And
but in this case, it yeah. seems like what's happened is the Avengers are missing. And okay. now there's this new big threat. And these are like the last people who are left to basically fight.
Okay.
It seems like Bucky's the one who's like recruiting people.
But it had the same tone as like a Deadpool comic, the Thunderbolts comic. It was very tongue-in-cheek. It was one of the few Marvel comics that I actually enjoyed reading because it wasn't so serious.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, but yeah. this just, I think it looks like a lot of fun. And like the cast is really good.
Does it still have the asterisks?
Yes. Because yeah. like it keeps coming up. It's the, I can't remember, it's Dan David Harbour's character. Keep saying we should call ourselves the Thunderbolts, and everyone's like, no. So I think the thing is they're going to call themselves the Thunderbolts during the movie, and then their like actual team name will be revealed at the end, whoever so they
I
really are.
I don't think I've seen the new trailer, but I've seen the teasers.
It just came
stuff.
Out like yesterday, so
okay.
I think this is the one that made me go, okay, cool, I'm actually kind of amped for this. Like the tone of it's cool, it seems funny, and it just seems like a good time. Like it's a way more similar like premise to Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But in Suicide Squad, it makes no sense because like, the rationale there is like, hey, we need a team if Superman ever goes evil. And you kind of look at them and go, these people will get smeared by Superman in a second. Yeah. Like they don't stand a chance. But in this case, the fact that all the other heroes are gone, it makes more sense that like a team of whoever's left makes sense.
Yeah.
Even if they're like the people who are least suited to fight someone with superpowers.
Yeah. Okay.
There was obviously, okay, we got a bunch of like, they often do like short teaser trailers as well. They'll just do like the 30-second TV spot. So we got one for F1, which
is the big Brad Pitt Formula
yes,
One film.
Which I know it's just like an ad for Formula One made by Formula One, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
Like it looks visually, it looks incredible. The way they've shot it is like the way like the camera is actually like attached to the cars.
Yeah.
And they can like operate the cameras while they're on the cars. It looks so interesting.
Formula One as an organization
yeah.
is such a slick,
yeah.
meticulous, like top-notch organization. Yeah. It's not like a fiasco, sham.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like it's a real tight, well-oiled machine.
Multi-billion-dollar, like yeah. huge. Like Formula One has gotten massive over the last few years.
And of course exploded since the Netflix show yeah. Drive to Survive, where literally the tours of these guys around the world has changed as a result of America giving
yes,
more of
exactly.
a shit. They always had one circuit.
Yeah, they introduced it at
and now there's
some,
like two or three more.
In like the 2010s, I think they did one in Texas, which was the first one in America.
Yeah, kind of like and then since Drive to Survive, there's been Vegas.
Yeah.
Was it a non-US thing before?
Yeah. It's always been very European
yes.
because of Ferrari and because of all these things. And America being classic America always had their yeah. own, you know, NASCARs, which they gave a shit about. But NASCAR, you just go around in circles. Yes. The Formula One is this beautiful display of brands and countries and loyalty and and strategy, because Monaco, for example, is vastly different from Silverstone and you know, the Dutch Grand Prix and Budapest. Yeah. And it's like, and it's this world tour, which is what makes it so exciting. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a rich set of cultures where, you know, the Dutch will love and come out for Verstappen at the Dutch Grand Prix. The British guys, even though they're driving a German car, will feel like they have to win at Silverstone. Monaco has got this incredible tradition.
Yeah.
And like, it's just steeped. It's like, it's Europe. It's steeped in more history.
Mm.
When America is just like, like round in circles. Okay, but that's cool. And that's coming out later this year.
Yes.
I think it's got this ballooned budget.
Yeah, it's got some insane sort of budget.
Yeah.
But I kind of understand with them having to shoot like on Formula One circuits.
Yeah. On race weekends as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what they've been doing. Yeah. So as the, and I'm sure it'll come up in the next season of Drive to Survive whenever that comes out, is that old Brad Pitt has come to these Formula Ones and they've shot footage for the movie. They've like piggybacked it off the infrastructure. It's always interesting when they do that, when filmmakers know that they need crowds. Have you ever seen the footage of Peter Jackson going to a New Zealand cricket game to get the audience to chant for the soundtrack to the orcs chanting in Lord of the Rings? And you see him in the middle like stomping, like showing everybody the rhythm of the stomping, and then everyone stomping on the stands. And he's like, yeah, you always get the one oak shouting something obnoxious in the corner. But it worked. And it was funny.
Yes.
Gaddy, have you got any news?
Yes. So there's this movie that...
You've got to say it in the way that we say it, Gad.
Hey, guys, did you see?
Hey, did you
Hey, did you see?
Hey, did you guys see?
Hey, did you guys see this movie from China called Ne Zhao 2?
This is the sequel.
It's a sequel. It's an animated movie.
Yeah.
It's the only movie that's ever made $1 billion in a single territory.
That's
wild. And it's been out for like a week.
Jeez, like.
Yeah. No, it is huge. I watched the trailer. I mean, it looks bonkers. I don't know. It's not for me. And everyone's just like, oh, the first one was great. But yeah, it's coming out in America February 14th.
Okay.
So hopefully it comes out at some point.
Fascinating.
But like, that's just so interesting that an animated movie out of everything.
And a sequel.
And a sequel.
But it also just goes to show like how big the China market for films has gotten.
Yeah.
Like they were going to overtake America at one point as being like the number one country. Right now, America is still like the biggest box office country.
Yeah.
But I think China's going to overtake them. There was even a period of time where studios were... Marvel was doing this a lot. They were shooting extra scenes with Chinese actors to insert them into Marvel movies that were only shown in China.
Interesting.
So there was like all subplots in Iron Man 2 or 3 that was only shown in Chinese theaters.
But they'll make different posters, like the Star Wars movies didn't have Finn on the cover.
Oh, yeah. They sort of erased a little bit of blackness.
Yeah.
And there was some other one that was very critical of China and then that just didn't get released at all. I think it was The Eternals.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Or also that Shang-Chi, I don't know, maybe had something because it was of Asian mysticism. But Matt Damon's film, The Great Wall.
Oh, yes.
Did that do well in China? Because it bombed in the rest of the world.
Don't think it did.
But that was him getting this like huge paycheck to make a Chinese movie.
Yes. And what he said about it afterwards, like, sometimes you can tell when it's just going to be crap.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, this isn't going to be great. Isn't Pedro Pascal also in that? Someone
it's
else
a
is in that.
Huge budget thing, yeah.
There's some other big action that I've heard of that in my life.
Yeah, it was called The Great Wall.
Yeah.
And it was years ago. No, and it was him with like a ponytail riding a fucking horse.
Yeah.
And then it was one of those like period films. Plus aliens, or like
plus monsters. Yeah, like they were attacking the Great Wall of China there to like defend it or whatever. I don't know. I've never saw it. So.
Yeah, I think even his kids make fun of him for that. all right. Hey, did you guys see the Academy Awards are considering a ruling?
Yeah.
Where films will have to disclose whether or not they've used AI.
Okay. Yes.
Camellia. Perez
and The Brutalist, because it's coming up in this race. So we've been talking about the fact that in the build-up to the Oscars, we've definitely felt more of a campaigning and the sort of politics of the Oscars. Yes. But it's up for debate whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing. But in some of these cases, it's been revealed.
Where did the Brutalist use it?
I don't know exactly.
So apparently what they did is they used AI to, in cases, some cases, slightly tweak Adrian Brody's accent.
Yes, his accent. That
to make his accent more like accurate.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
who cares? Yeah. I think it's just, you know, we're in the growing pains of AI, and I think a lot of policy needs to be figured out.
Yes.
Hence the huge actor strike.
Mm.
But I think it's just one of those things where you just got to, there's just got to be a sort of a little box you tick.
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, we used it. Yes. So what?
I also think it depends on like how you use and what you use
it
for.
Yeah.
You know, if you're using like these models at the that as like a, you know, post studio, whatever you've built yourself. Because like something like where they're doing an accent, I don't know how they... That has to be something that they like custom made themselves to like control that. There's no like off the shelf AR software that tweaks people's accents.
Yeah.
That has to be something that they like built themselves and like trained in a way that they're in control of.
Yeah. But I've seen that the footage of, you know, you take someone talking English and then you can just get them to talk another language and their mouth moves in time with another language.
So what's going to happen? Are we in a future now if there's like a Disney animation where they can literally just put AI and it's in French, it's in Italian?
We're on our way there.
I feel like that's possible. Yeah. I feel like it's already possible.
There are ways to do that now, but it's quite
little
involved.
Because the AI is going to be so brilliant that it'll change the mouth movements to match the talking.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Like right now, there are actually a couple of films where they've done this, where they recorded in one language and then they film the actors again in like a studio sort of setting, speaking a different... So they'll have actors who are multilingual, who then deliver all the dialogue in a different language, and then they use that information to then like sort of like 3D track, deep fake that new dialogue onto the same footage that they shot in a different language. So that's quite heavily involved, but it'll probably become like an automated system.
Wild.
Yeah, that's insane.
Do you have any other trailers or things that you...
Yes, there were several more trailers.
Was the Superman teaser?
With him flying, which that's probably out of all the like big movies this year, that might be the one I'm most... Maybe not like, I think Mission Impossible is the one I'm most like excited for because they have such a solid track record that I'm like 99% sure Mission Impossible is going to be a great movie.
And this also feels like it's the end of this Tom Cruise Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which, I feel like it has to, like when you watch a fireworks display, I remember watching, I happened to be in Zurich for New Year's once. So this is a nice big wealthy city. And I was like, how the fuck do you end this? Mm. It's the most incredible display. And then the ending happened. I was like, oh, that's how.
Yes.
So I hope that this ends in a way that does the last, eight, nine films?
Yeah, this is the eighth one.
Yeah, last seven films justice.
We did get another spot for it. We had like a previous teaser trailer. Now they did another 30-second spot. It's looking freaking amazing because of course it is.
Yeah.
Like, but again, they have such a solid track record.
I want Superman to do well.
Yes, that's the thing. Out of the ones that I'm like not sure about, Superman is the one that I'm like most excited about.
Yeah.
And the one that I like want to do the best.
Just Crypto. Crypto's like my favorite character in Superman.
The dog. Yeah.
He used to be in the cartoons. I love Crypto.
Yeah, no, it just feels nice and fresh, and it feels colorful and fun, where, you know, there was just that era of the Superman films that were very dark.
Oh, that Zack Snyder, he did not understand Superman, and it killed me.
What did he miss? Because this just, I'm a bit objective.
So
here.
He made him very dark and sullen and
complicated.
Like, yeah, he was just like this broody character. He was Batman, basically.
And what is Superman to you guys?
Well, Superman's just positive and emanates light. And to me, the idea of having the most powerful body and all these superpowers, it could have gone either way. He could have become like a supervillain and taken over the world, or taken the route that he took and decided to save humanity.
Yeah.
And that's quite special.
Yeah.
Mm.
The thing about Snyder is he's clearly like obsessed with Frank Miller's writing. Yeah. Like everything he does seems to be derived from The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm.
So it's very much that version of Superman, who's a bit of an idiot.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a Boy Scout who just kind of like falls in line and does as he's told by like the powers that be. And it seems like that's the point of view that Snyder comes from.
Okay.
You know.
And it was also like it was more about Clark Kent than Superman for me and his relationship with Lois and how he balances that Superman Clark Kent life. And
yeah, that was what was nice about Smallville, which I remember watching as a kid, which was like, I just want to live my life and I just want to.
Yes.
I'm a complex character with thoughts and feelings. Yeah.
And there's the Lois and Clark, or Clark and Lois. What's the new show that's on?
Oh, yes.
Lois and Superman.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Apparently, it's quite good.
I've seen a few. What if Daniel makes me watch some episodes?
There's also an animated series called My Adventures with Superman.
Yeah, I haven't checked it out.
Which has Jack Quaid as Superman. Apparently, it's really, really good. I've heard like nothing.
He's doing
but good
a lot.
Things. Yeah, he's busy.
DC animation is. What leagues ahead of the live action.
Yeah, they put out a ton of stuff.
I'll just never forget as a, I don't know, teenager listening to the band Spin Doctors.
Oh, yeah.
They were a very cool band, and their most famous song was called Two Princes, and I'm sure you'll recognize
Pocket
it when you hear it.
Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Then they had an album called Pocket Full of Kryptonite, and that song was such a...
Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane.
Yeah,
but the this other song, Pocket Full of Kryptonite, was such a great premise for what could be an amazing TV show or movie, which was the guy who loves Lois Lane, who's just a normal dude, and he's like, how the fuck do I compete with Superman?
Right.
Like, how could I ever come close?
Yes.
Which is a cool premise. Any other wildly unique movies that got a trailer? Or
well, the other big one that we got was Jurassic World Rebirth.
Yes. Which it just feels like another fucking same thing.
I don't even know how many of the last movies I haven't watched. I don't know where I gave up.
I think this one is like none of the same characters are back. This is all new characters.
Okay, so we got Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. We got Scarlett Johansson, you got...
And the whole thing is we got to go...
Charlie.
We got to go back to this island.
Yes. So this one is... The reason I'm like, okay, this might be good. First of all, it's written by David Koepp, who wrote the first one. Yeah. He wrote the original Jurassic Park.
The original 1990
footsack. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, well, he adapted it that same. Michael Crichton wrote the book.
Michael Crichton book.
Yes. And that, so David Koepp wrote the original Mission Impossible. He's like Steven Spielberg's script doctor. Steven Spielberg will very often bring in David Koepp, like very late in the process to basically do a draft, like a final, like, let's clean this like script up.
So
you'll see David
Koepp
credited on a lot of stuff. As like another writer, so like the Indiana Jones, some of the old later Indiana Jones movies and that sort of thing.
He must be a bully now.
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
I would think so.
All right, so he's writing it.
Yes, and it's directed by Gareth Edwards, who's the guy who did The Creator.
Oh, Rogue One.
He did Rogue One, he did Godzilla, he did The Creator.
Okay.
Yes.
So he's a good director, and like he understands sci-fi.
Yes.
And I think he gets like how to shoot this stuff in a compelling
way. Okay, this is now seeming more and more interesting.
And it's like, it is still like a sequel to the other ones, but it doesn't involve those characters. And it seems like the idea is like some big pharmaceutical company is basically trying to see if dinosaurs have any value. From a pharmaceutical point of view,
in their DNA,
so they have to go back to. I don't know if it's the island from The Lost World or not, but it's the place where they say in the trailer it's the place where they like originally did all the experimentation to create the dinosaurs to try and clone them and get them right.
Okay,
which is why, like as some people point out, the dinosaurs in this look a bit weird in some cases, like they're not quite right.
Mm.
Like these are all the ones that that were like mistakes before they got like the correct, so to speak, dinosaurs.
Okay.
So you get there's one you see a couple glimpses on that is obviously just like the big monster in this one, which isn't even a dinosaur. It's obviously just something that came out completely wrong. And it's this big mutant fucking thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Kip's also done some questionable movies. Secret Window, Mordecai, Ghost Town.
Again, the thing about Kep is he is kind of a script doctor.
These are the ones he directed.
Oh, is he a director as well?
I'm pretty sure he directed Secret Window.
Interesting.
Yeah. Listen, I sometimes feel far more comfortable coming in to help a creative project than write it from my own.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of my value in our band is not being the original writer, but more helping tweak and... being objective.
Yes.
It's a very different kettle of fish.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
But also, like, the thing about these movies is it's none of the stuff we're talking about matters because we're all going to go and watch it because it has freaking dinosaurs in it.
Exactly.
Let's be honest.
And I wanted to ask you guys, what's your favorite dinosaur?
I've always liked the raptors, the Velociraptor. I had a raptor.
Velociraptor.
Velociraptor.
Gad says everything weird.
Yeah.
Gad says pizza.
How would you say?
Velociraptor.
But it's C-I.
Gad also says Adam Sandler.
Oh, right.
Okay, so Gad likes the Velociraptors.
Maybe Stegosaurus. I like a Stegosaurus.
I also kind of like the Stegosaurus.
They're just weird.
Yeah, with
they're freaky little guys.
Little Godzilla-y dudes are just sort of walking on all fours for a change.
And the big spiky things on its tail.
Yeah.
Which are named, they never had a name for it, so they named it after a Far Side comic book. I mean, a Far Side like strip where there's a joke about a like a prehistoric doctor or something with, he just invented the word thagomizer, Gary Larson.
Yeah.
He just made up a word, thagomizer. So that's what they called the Stegosaurus's tail is called a thagomizer.
There's also some moth that's named after Larson or something.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I got one more little hey, did you guys see, cool, which was the fact that Anora has done well this last few days.
Nice.
In the Oscar race.
Yes.
And took home a lot at the Directors Guild Awards.
Oh, I missed that.
Sean Baker won that.
Cool.
So that's all the directors coming together. And then also at the Producers Guild Awards,
okay. The
PGA. And so in this sort of press or sort of PR or commentary about the Oscar race,
yeah,
this seems to put Anora forward.
Okay.
And to be a front runner in these kind of best director, best film categories, which
it's
I think
is really
very
good movie.
It's a really good movie. Anora has been screening at the Bioscope, and when you asked me, Gad, how's it doing? It's been doing well.
Okay.
But it's not a movie like Nosferatu where it's like, you gotta see it.
Yes.
You know, there's not like an excitement around it because it's not necessarily an exciting movie.
Mm.
It's a fucking good movie.
Yes.
And there is a lot of comedy and situation and there is a lot to it, but ultimately you leave it feeling quite sad for her, which is really good, and it's what makes it a good movie. But you don't necessarily leave it and go like, oh, you got to see it.
You know what I think is the problem with the marketing, and I know that it isn't,
yeah,
but like just based on the posters and a couple of the trailers, it feels like it could be a Gaspar Noir movie.
Right. What but, I sort of lean into sort of the sex and the sexual violence like
and weirdness, and but obviously it's not that.
Yeah.
I think with the marketing, they're not leaning into the comedy enough. It's a surprisingly funny movie.
It's very funny, and that's what ultimately like makes it good.
Yes,
is this kind of situational comedy where you've got to, you know, they basically the majority of the movie is them trying to find, you know, the husband, the missing kid. It's an amazing movie, and it really deserves a lot. But it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. It's exciting for us to keep talking about the race because there's a lot of nuance to it. But it's interesting that it's won these awards.
Cool.
All right. Just before we get into the movies, I see someone coming.
Oh.
I think we need to go do our jobs.
Yeah.
Okay, let me go to the front quick.
Cool.
What's your name?
Tarika.
And what are you returning?
I'm returning The Wild Robot. It's a
movie.
Oh my
God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great. It was so adorable. I watched it recently and it's definitely like a bit of a tearjerker, but it's so cute. It's about like this robot that adopts this goose. It's very, very cutesy.
We screened it here at the Bioscope. Great. And I saw it coming months and months away, and I could see that it had something special.
It's adorable.
It's so beautiful, though, right?
I loved it. It's just absolutely adorable. Yeah, and it did really well. I'm not surprised. Like,
and what was lovely about it is that it was an original.
Yes.
In a year, like last year, when there was like Despicable Me 4 and Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
As great as Inside Out 2 was.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we got this original new story.
Exactly. And I feel like, it's not exactly like original, but I
mean, it's based on a book.
Oh yeah, that. But I was actually just thinking about the Puss in Boots movie. I know it was like a second movie, but it was really brilliant in that they like took on a new different kind of like animation and stuff. And yeah, I thought that was like that stop lovely, motion like, kind
but it's
of.
Also that very lovely like painted watercolor.
Yeah, it was texture. So beautiful. Yeah, so I haven't enjoyed like an animated movie like that since the Puss in Boots movie. Yeah. So I really loved The Wild Robot. So,
and yeah. We've been selling the book.
Oh,
at the
Bioscope. Okay, cool.
It's a young, it's like a kid's book.
Mm.
So it's very simple.
Okay.
But it's super beautiful. And yeah. I'm sure there'll be more Wild Robot movies because there's more books.
Okay. That's cool.
So I'm sure there'll
cool.
be more.
I'm looking forward to seeing some more of that. Yeah.
Okay, lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what a good return.
Yes, thank you.
What did you think of Straight Story?
I liked it. I thought it was interesting. It was cute. It was simple. It was simple and cute. I mean, I think it ended really well.
Yeah.
I was worried that he wouldn't get to where he needed to go. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
Mm, yeah.
Lovely. Thank you for coming out.
Yeah.
Thank you
course.
For the return.
Of course. Thank you.
Lovely. And hope to have you visit the Bioscope and the video store.
Of
soon.
Course. Of course. Cool. Thank cool. you.
Cheers. Lovely. Lovely to interact with customers. we forget the fact that you know, we can't just talk shit back here,
right?
Amongst ourselves forever.
Work.
Sometimes we have to work, and it's always nice to chat. Also to chat about such a lovely movie like Wild Robot, which I think could win Best Animation.
It's
up against Flow, which I haven't seen. You saw Flow.
If Flow doesn't win, I'm going to be very upset.
I mean, it's up against Flow and Inside Out 2, which were both well received.
Well, I've actually, funny enough, I've got one more Hey Did You Guys See, which is the fact that in a Lithuanian city, they've unveiled a statue of the little cat. From the movie Flow.
Cool.
Because it's groundbreaking that it's the first, I think it's one of the first Lithuanian films to have ever been nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, right.
There's not a lot of talking in it, hey, Gerd?
Zero.
No
zero
dialogue,
talking.
Yeah.
Not one.
So it's
word.
All animals being animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every now and again, there's one of those. And,
yes.
And it's like, it's lovely.
There was one the previous year as well. The one with the robot and the dog. What was that one? Robot Dreams.
Robot Dreams.
Yeah, that also had no dialogue.
Yeah, I love that. I watched
it. It was
on
very sweet,
So good.
I watched this one about the snail, Marcel the Shell.
Yeah,
that
was cute
as fuck.
That had a lot of talking in there.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, though, as another thing, they haven't shown any trailers yet, but the same director who did that, or directors, it might have been two people, are doing the Lilo and Stitch live action remake.
Oh, are they doing it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes.
So they're also... Last Hey Did You Guys See?
No, listen. Bring them up.
So, Hey Did You Guys See? They're making a Hollywood version of the game It Takes Two. I don't know.
What is the game?
I don't know. Have you ever played that
game? I haven't played it, but I do know about it.
So, it's a game I'm actually currently playing with Corbin, where it's a collab game. You have to play it with two players.
But this is like a PC console game.
Yeah, it's a console. It's on all of them.
Yeah.
So, basically, the idea is it's a couple that are in the middle of a divorce. And
this is a game you're playing with your 8-year-old.
No, this is it's like quite quite like deep.
Yeah. Okay,
so they're in the middle of a divorce and they have a fight, and it focuses on their daughter, who basically goes off to this place where she goes when she is upset.
Yeah,
and she's made dolls of her parents.
Okay,
and basically a spell happens and she cries and the dolls come alive. The parents. Personalities go into these dolls.
Jesus Christ, this is a game.
Yeah.
Oh, they're it is crazy.
Okay.
So they've basically got to go on this series of adventures. So they miniature and they've got to find their way out of the snow globe that they've been put in. And yeah, you know, there's scenes where they basically have to murder a teddy bear, and it's sick. Like, I don't know.
Why are you playing this with your kid? And also, how do you pull this off as a game? Do you know about this game?
Yeah.
Have you played it?
I haven't played it, but I've seen
it. It's amazing.
It,
so you have to, like, at first it starts off, you've got, like, wool, and you've got a swing on stuff, and you've got hooks, and it's so fun and involved.
The complex mind that devised this game.
It is crazy. Like, it's so brilliant. It's
you're
like problem
inside
solving.
A snow globe.
Yeah, so you go through a series of snow globes, which are inside the house on the property in which they live, and they're trying to... So she was like an engineer.
And what is the ultimate goal? To have your parents work out their marital dispute?
Basically, yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's complex.
No, and I'm like, it's quite crazy. Like, while playing this game with Corbin, I'm like talking to him. And it's just like do you understand what is actually happening here? No, it's like it's been a great learning tool.
Interesting.
Because obviously like his parents aren't together anymore and it's like a lot to
deal
with.
You're his new dad.
Yeah.
That's tough enough.
No, like watching it and these stories come up and I'm like, how am I going to talk to him? And he's just like so open and it's like such a great way for him to like get these ideas into his head. So it's
interesting. Okay, so there's now going to be a movie make.
Yes.
Interesting.
And it's also like guys who did the Sonic movie.
Oh, okay.
Sonic or Mario Brothers, one of those two are handling the adaptation of the movie.
Interesting.
But that same studio has another game coming out that's also like co-op.
Okay.
Where I think the idea is it's obviously some sort of like slightly futuristic thing where if you like create a piece of fiction, if you're like a writer or whatever, you can create like a simulation of your like fictional world that you've created. And these two different people who have created two different like simulations that end up like their simulations like merge. Oh. One's like a fantasy writer, one's a sci-fi writer. And they're two like fantasy like scenario things have like merged into one thing.
That's cool.
And again, it's like a split. It's like a split.
It's so funny because he's like, well, come play It Takes Two with me. Come play. And we can't always. So he'll sit on two remotes and try and figure out how to play this game.
Yeah, what is a co-op game and what does that mean sort of structurally as a game?
Cooperative.
You can't play it as a one player.
Yeah.
You have to have another person.
Yeah. Or I think there is an option to go online multiplayer and play with someone.
And then is the idea that someone's got to do something while you do something. Have they designed the game that you kind of need to?
So like one part of the game, you get a magnet and it's split into two. And one player has the left and the other player has the right. So you need to figure out together how to use your magnets to pass the level.
Okay.
Yeah, it's beyond
and the game insane. The game that they did before this one, I can't remember what it was called. But it was, again, the same thing where, like, it's two-player only and you're playing a pair of escaped convicts.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, when you're having to, like, evade and all that sort of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's like a really unique way, like, design
There was a long time in my life where gaming really wasn't around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, like, watching two friends just by chance. I went to someone's house and two guys were playing, like, a Call of Duty.
Right.
And I just remember watching them plan together and it was just a combination of me just being that much older, me being quite objective around the world of gaming and going like, oh my god, like they are delegating, they are sharing skills, they are strategizing, like this is very good as a communication tool.
Yeah.
And it's not mindless. This was many, many years ago. I was like, don't let anybody tell you that, like, you know, it's rotting the minds of our youth. It's like they are fucking working this shit out.
Yeah, well,
they are communicating. Like they are delegating. They are like
there's actually like
strategizing.
Proper research papers on how gaming affects like brain development and that sort of thing, and how people who play games from a young age have like more developed problem solving skills.
Yeah, of course.
And people who don't. I still want to do a thing. I think I want to at some point we need to look at like video content for our YouTube channel, and I want to sit you down with the Stanley Parable.
As someone who
hasn't really played games their whole life.
This is a game called the Stanley Parable.
And the whole thing is like a meta commentary on gaming. And I want to see what happens when we sit you down with it.
That's where you're walking in the offices.
Yeah. With the narrator.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer for that.
It is a phenomenal game.
I think I actually downloaded it on PlayStation. It was on the store.
Let's do it, man. Yeah, you've brought this up.
The trailer for it is amazing.
Yeah, it is such a funny game as well. It's such a great game.
Okay, and then we'll record how I react to it.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, lovely. Okay, I'm keen. Let's talk about September 5.
Cool.
Got to watch it last week, and funny enough, the Bioscope this week is hosting a special screening of it.
Right.
It's an invite-only thing, and it's very cool that the Bioscope's now becoming the host of these kinds of publicity events. September 5 is a film about the attack on the Israeli Olympic team in the 1978 Munich Olympics.
Mm.
And why it's interesting, and you can clearly see why they've chosen this very unique angle of approaching it, because as I said, it's already been fictionalized and become a film. The film was called Munich.
Yeah.
But what made this special, and I didn't really know this, and so that's why I'm telling you guys, is that in 1978, it was really the first time we had live TV.
Yeah.
And those Olympics, the 1978 Olympics, were the first Olympics that were being broadcast live.
Okay. Mm.
And one of the biggest charms of this movie is seeing how this was done and seeing the technology of how they did it. This whole movie takes place and comes from the perspective of the sports crew, the television crew that were covering the Olympics, okay, that then ended up covering this attack.
Right.
This hostage situation in the Olympic Village. And so the whole, you never even go into the rooms, you never even see these characters up front, but you see the crazy thing unfolding and how these guys in the television crew are trying to help cover it.
Right.
And it plays this great fine line between, is it important and necessary and integral that we show this?
Right.
Or is it them being caught up in their own hype and just wanting their network to be better than other networks? It's the classic conundrum and moral debate of news journalism,
right?
Which is like, are you there to help cover and make it, you know, because we all want, the whole world is watching,
yeah?
Or are you like making it worse by by
sensationalizing
it and doing it? There's this one moment which I think best epitomizes this moment, which it comes up, I think, in the trailer as well, where they're filming the fact that these guys are now coming down the sides and they're going to try and get into these apartments. This is the television crew. And then the one guy goes, are there televisions in the Olympic Village? And the guy's like, I don't know, maybe, yeah. And the guy was like, are they watching this right now? Like, can they see what we see?
Right.
And it's just this, you know, this crazy situation that the world had never dealt with.
Yes.
Which is like how you deal with live and what live means. And then knowing that you can't script what happens, there's this great moment where they're like, what if they execute someone on live TV? Like, what can we show that? Do we, this could result in this. And it's great. You're with them the whole way.
It's quite interesting. I just link to what's happening at the moment with Elon just closing down organizations in America. Yeah. I've been watching the news coverage, and I've never seen the news broadcasters just speechless. They're like giving these reports, and they're fumbling, and they're just like, "How is this happening? I can't." And it's like quite crazy because you're so used to the professionalism in American news media.
Yeah.
And now there's just people going, like, I don't know what to say anymore.
Yeah.
And it's quite crazy. So it kind of fits in quite nicely.
Yeah. And you see how the news spreads and how they have to go about the journalism.
Yeah.
You know, because there was this point, and it's also not to give too much away, but it all sort of happened. So there's a point where they then move to the airport once they've left the Olympic Village. And it's like people don't know what's going on, and you can't quite report on the situation until you've had it somewhat corroborated.
Yeah.
But you're hearing words, and then it's like, okay, well then what is the wording you've got to say to, you know, suggest that it's just, you know, as we know it or as we understand it, or you know, there's certain words and but it's I enjoyed it. So yeah, okay. September 5, because that's obviously the date when this happened. But I just think it's because it was the first live televised terrorist attack ever, that it makes sense that you are watching it through the people who covered it, because they had the cameras.
Yes.
Literally in the studio, if they just wheeled it out and faced it east, they could get a window on this thing. So they were there. But then, of course, what makes this movie interesting is that they're not news. They're sports.
Yeah.
but they have the slot and how they sort of fight to keep more slots so that they can tell the story. Right. So then that's when it all gets a bit corrupted because they believe they should be the ones telling it.
Right.
But they're also not equipped to tell it because they're the sports team.
Right.
And it's like, are you doing that just to be greedy and get the attention? Or are you helping? Are you doing the good work or the bad work? Yeah. It's very interesting.
Okay.
So it's a cool film.
Okay. Sounds like we'd make a good like double feature with Munich. Because Munich is about like the aftermath of the whole attack. It's not about the attack itself.
Yeah.
I never finished Munich. I need to watch that.
It's a good movie. We could do a whole episode about like unintentional cinematic universes. About movies that are like not made to be connected but are all connected to each other.
Yeah.
There's tons of those.
Yeah. Yeah, I know with A Complete Unknown, Perrin was the first to say, like, you should also watch Walk the Line.
Yes.
You know, which was the Johnny Cash biopic made by the same filmmaker. Because in a way, they're kind of, they do exist in the same universe because it's James Mangold's head.
Yes.
They have to exist in the same universe.
After Walk Hard, I can't watch a biopic anymore.
Yeah, it kind of shat all over it. That's the parody film with John C. Reilly.
And the Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. But then, as I said, I've also watched these exhibitor screenings. As I said, I'm not quite sure what I can say.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep it really brief. But Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy, is just like a good, solid, what you want and need it to be.
Okay.
And I'm sure it'll do very well for a certain audience that know and love Bridget Jones. Over to The Monkey, which is the Osgood Perkins film. This is the same guy who did Long Legs.
Yeah.
This one felt more fun.
Okay.
And it's a bit more silly, and it's a bit more like, how crazy would it be if we did this?
Okay.
And then it was like, done, you know, for the sake of camera.
Yes.
So I think it's going to be a really good horror film for people to watch and enjoy together.
Nice.
It's like a, oh my God, I can't believe I just saw that kind of film.
Hey, cool.
It's about a killer monkey that enters the lives of these two boys. They're twins. And it basically like plagues them for their whole life.
Okay.
And you sort of realize there's a certain set of rules around this monkey and how it works.
Monkey
is
in like a toy monkey.
It's
like
a toy monkey.
The symbols.
It's got two little drumsticks and a snare drum between it and it.
The one that's normally in Homer Simpson's head.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's this like little circus monkey with very creepy eyes.
Kind of like the one from Toy Story 3.
Yes.
There's a creepy monkey.
Yeah, it is a creepy thing. And they probably all read the same Stephen King short.
Exactly.
Which became this film.
Cool.
But yeah, we'll talk about it more when it comes out. But that's going to be at the end of Friday of February is when The Monkey comes out. And we'll screen it at the Bioscope. It's definitely a Bioscope outing.
I'm excited about this one.
Which is cool. Over onto television, I watched Paradise, which is the big Disney Plus.
Okay.
It is one of those where you definitely have to watch the whole of the first episode to get the big picture.
Right.
Because there is definitely more to it. But it is in the world of America and big set pieces and you know, the whole world is involved. But because our main character, Sterling K. Brown, plays him, he is like the chief security officer for the president.
Okay.
And right at the beginning, the president dies.
Right.
And we jump backwards and forwards in what kind of builds up to this happening.
Okay.
But I can tell you at the end of the first episode is a sort of like a big reveal, which sets up the whole show.
Cool.
And it's nice not knowing what that is, so that when you watch it, you get this like, okay, fuck. All right.
Cool.
It's bigger than the story kind of reveal.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Seems pretty good.
Right.
It's what you, I'm the guy that in the team that talks about the gooiness of things, and I'm there for the emotion and the goo. Graham, I think it's safe to say you're here for the big swings.
Big swing, yeah.
You enjoy the big swings.
Big swing approved.
Let me tell you, by television, this looks like one of the biggest swings one could ever have.
Okay, interesting.
So let's see what happens.
All right.
By the obscure runoffs.
I don't know where you are, Gaddy. We're still figuring it out.
Yeah, we need to figure those, like what each of us, like you're the GUI approved guy.
Mm.
I'm Big Swing guy. And then at the end of the year when we do our most rented episode,
yes,
you must do your best GUI movie. I must do the biggest, the best Big Swing, sort of thing.
Perrin is like the most obscure.
Yes.
So like he must pick a movie that's like really good, but it's like the most obscure. Yeah. Like his award winning most Perrin film would be like a black and white silent Macedonian film. He literally has spoken about a film very similar to that.
Yes.
Which is impeccable, by the way. But it's like,
how do you not know the title?
He explains it and we're like, I am not going to watch that. Or I should.
Yeah.
But it's gonna take a real convincing. What are you, Gaddy? I guess you're like comic booky.
Yeah, I'll just irreverent.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Marigold's definitely like the darker, more fucked up, twisted one. Cole, we're not sure.
I don't know. We can figure it out.
Mm.
I just like randomness and absurdism.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Every movie needs to be like that.
Okay, lovely.
We can talk about the Squid Game mobile game.
Right.
Okay, what is that?
So I got a notification on my Netflix app that there is a Squid Game game that I can download. And
you play it on your phone?
On your phone, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's like a little miniature version of Squid Game. You log in and then you've got to wait for 32 players to log in at the same time.
Oh, live so, other players from around the world.
Yeah, so you're playing against other players. And then it throws you into these mini games, which are basically based on Squid Game.
Oh, cool.
Like one of them is Red Light, Green Light. You have to run across. And then there's a game where they had to, with the needle, make the triangle or the circle. I don't know if you saw the original Squid Game.
I watched the first episode or two to sort of see what it was all about.
Okay, so yeah, they just like take very simplified versions. There was a game where it's like a little kind of biscuit, and then with a needle they had to make a pattern, either a triangle or a circle or an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So the version that you play in the game is you in these buildings and you have to run around a circle, run around a triangle, and the levels drop, and then you have to like run to the end.
Okay. And but are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm just not very good at it. I immediately get killed.
So they're like a bunch of people knocked out in each round?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like a battle royale.
Yeah, so like only half go through to the next round, and then you earn currency, and with the currency you can buy new players and new skills. Like the one guy has a baseball bat. I don't know.
Gad plays a lot of mobile games.
Right.
I've spent many years in the same vehicle as Gad, traveling for hours and hours on end, and Gad plays a lot of mobile games. Gad played Tum Tums.
Years.
Gad really like lent into Tum Tums.
What the fuck is that?
So it's a Japanese gacha game. It's kind of like a Match 3, but using all the Disney characters.
Oh, okay.
And they're these kind of sausaged versions of all the Disney characters.
Okay.
And how they've sort of piled up like sausages. You see them from the front and you've got to make these things. But then they actually invented little plush versions that you could buy.
I've seen that.
That were sort of almost like the size of your hand, like a few fingers.
Mm.
And those were Tum Tums. And Gad, for the longest time, was out there meeting and interacting with women in a car that had his whole dashboard filled with Tum Tum characters across his dashboard. And I was like, you're going to go out there and like bring a girl back into your car, and she's going to look and sit in the passenger seat and see 50 like Tum Tums scattered across your dashboard and just be like, take me now. Take me now. I am yours.
I had all my Lego characters out at one point.
And you were like a solid 30 years old at this point.
I like looking at these things.
Yeah.
No, I love it, Gad. It's like, you must be you.
Yeah.
But it's like, at no point in any of my cars that I've ever had, at any point in my now adult life, did I go, you know what, this dashboard would look so much better with a bunch of Lego characters stuck on with plastic.
I had a disco ball for the longest time. Yeah. You get in my car, it's a party, bro.
Right.
No, it really is a party. Can we talk about where you hid your weed?
Yeah.
I once watched where Gad hid his weed because we saw a roadblock come up ahead. He would hide it between his legs, underneath his ball sack.
Right.
Oh, no. That, well, I mean, I would hide
it in his gooch.
I mean, one, I had a sunroof. I'd hide it in there. My steering wheel thing popped open. Oh, there's so many places.
He had a couple of like weed hiding places. I love how we'd now just have woken up in a world where weed is just so readily available.
Yeah.
Like, there's shops that are called Dachaden and like Cannabis Kingdom and all this shit.
We go to a place called Thingy.
It's just called Thingy. But just back in the day, Gad would have to like hide it into his pants.
Yeah.
He'd have to like put the weed in his,
that's in his ridiculous. Underpants.
And you're going to have to explain that to Corbin one day. And he's going to be like, what the fuck? Funny. All right. Bless you, Gaddy. You and all your tum tums. Where are they now?
Jess made me put them all on one shelf.
Okay, good. As long as they're still around.
I've got a designated spot.
There you go.
No, he loved it. All right, Tum Tum, thank you for your shift today.
Oh,
we appreciate it. Yeah. G-Force, thank you for coming out. Thanks for telling us about all the Super Bowl things. And we're one of those people that could not give a fuck about the game.
Yes.
One, because we're South African and we don't care about American football.
Exactly.
Do we know who won?
Absolutely. I don't even know who was playing.
Wasn't Taylor Swift's boyfriend's team?
Possibly. Yeah.
Travis Kelce plays for the Kansas City Chiefs,
right,
who were playing. And the only reason I know that is because of the Netflix show Quarterback, which is still worth your time.
Okay.
If you want to vaguely understand the world of American football,
right?
Because the quarterback kind of controls and manages and strategizes and puts the whole kind of game in motion.
Right.
And one of the characters who stands out is a dude called Patrick Mahomes, who's considered one of the best quarterbacks of all time, or at least today.
Right.
And he plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay. It just so happens one of the other guys on the team is with Taylor Swift.
Right.
I just know this because it's the first game that a sitting president's ever going to.
Right.
He's going with Musk and they've got a thing with Taylor Swift. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking who cares?
I know way too much about that.
Jeez. Yeah. And then Netflix also did another show which was about the receivers. So once the quarterback throws the ball,
right,
and he throws it in a particular direction and they've done a certain movement, literally the only other part of football is the catching of that ball.
Right.
And and those guys are very interesting because they can take like huge hits. They've got to catch these balls in motion. And so there's another show called Receiver, which follows three or four of these receivers, which kind of completes the picture. The only other thing you do in football then is just block.
Okay.
And that would be the world's shittest TV show because it's just like a big dude, you know, sumo wrestling kind of another big dude.
Yes.
That's the only game.
Okay.
It's the only part of the game.
I think there's the only time I've ever been interested in football is in the Adam Sandler movie, The Longest Yard.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only time I ever gave
the whole
a shit.
The whole 9 yards was great. I remember enjoying it. The Oliver Stone, Al Pacino movie.
No,
you're getting yourself confused.
Oh, no. What was that
Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday.
Yes. Whole Nine Yards is with the guy from Friends. And
he was a dentist, and Bruce Willis was an assassin.
Any Given Sunday, yes.
Yeah, no, Any Given Sunday is the big Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx, yes.
And he's the inches by inches speech,
which
is what a lot of dudes like listen to get pumped before games. Yeah. All right, lekker.
Nice.
Cool. We still don't know who won.
No,
still
or care.
Still don't give a shit. Yeah. All right,
Kendrick Lamar won.
Yeah. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za.
Yes.
And that is where we've got some past episodes. We've got links to all sorts of things. And you must just let us know what you think.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we want to get your returns. There's also a little info below on how you can return something. Mm. Like our friend did with Wild Robot today.
Yeah.
And we just hope to get you back here. All right. Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.